Radio Gorgeous, where women do the talking. Hello, welcome to Radio Gorgeous. My name is Josephine Pembroke, and I'm sorry, there's no Donna Freed this week. She can't be with us. So I'm presenting Gorgeous Gossip. How are you all? It's the most gorgeous day today. I hope it's a gorgeous day where you are now. Now, author of the week is Karen Joy Fowler. She's most famous for the Jane Austen Book Club, and which spent 13 weeks on the New York Times bestsellers list. And she's written a new book, which I think is very, very, very good title. We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves. Donna Freed is interviewing her. Sounds completely fascinating. Then we're going over to Mayfair. Now, don't think, oh my God, it's a place I never go, because you must go, because it's a vintage shop, which has got things in that we can afford. It's got beautiful Chanel handbags, Gucci handbags. It's also got really good gifts. If you've got a birthday coming up, or you've got a friend with a birthday coming up and it ends in O, this is a place to go in something special, not made in China. Beautiful things like goblets for champagne or suffragette jewellery, which I think was really cool. Also, she's offering 10% off if you buy online, so you have to check out her page. Now to this week's Gorgeous Gossip. We've interviewed four different women. Three women are in a production called World Enough and Time. That's on at the Park Theatre in Finsbury Park, very near the Tube, so you've got no excuse, quite easy to get to. It's on at the moment. It's created by a company which we've just found, which we love, called Fluff. Oh, yes. Fluff Productions. It's an all-women's company. It was set up in 2006 by a group of women who left drama school and thought, it's not good enough. We are going to create plays for women, roles for women, all-women productions, because on average, women have 30% of the roles which are on in the theatre, which, as we know, isn't fair. And I've created this latest play. I'll just tell you, because I love the sound of the fur-clad Rebecca Dunn as an upper-class 30s journalist, Pamela. With an eyebrow arch and impeccable comic timing, Dunn recounts how she reluctantly was drawn into politics when asked to interview the King of England's American companion, Wallis Simpson. Then it goes to two other lives in history of women and talking about how they were challenged or empowered. So it's really, really interesting. Really like that. And Donna talked to three of the women. It was actually Rebecca Dunn, who started off Fluff Productions. And she also talked to Kate Bonner and Jess Murphy. So have a listen now.
All right. So will you guys introduce yourselves one after the other?
I'm Rebecca Dunn, and I'm playing Pamela.
I'm Katie Bonner, and I'm playing Joan in the 17th century scenes, and Lucy in the 2014 scenes.
And my name's Jess Murphy, and I am playing Anne in the 17th century scenes and Celia in the 2014 scenes.
Excellent. Now, the play, as we can hear, takes place in three different times. Could you guys explain, Rebecca, do you want to explain a bit about the play?
Oh, I can try. Yes, it's basically about women in sort of political landscapes, these three different eras. They're all very different, the three pieces. I mean, the 16th century and the modern piece are both naturalistic in style. The 1936 section is like a monologue, so it's different in style. But yes, they're all looking at the way women are reacting to the sort of social situation of the time. And you've got the very extreme circumstances of the 17th century, where they're facing Cromwell's army. And I mean, these girls will better be better at talking about that because they're in that bit of the play. And then you've got me as Pamela, 1936, living a very blinkered world. She's very upper class. Post-First World War, everyone wants to just have a jolly old time and not worry about things. And what was going on in Germany and in Europe was they were trying to block out. And gradually, Pamela gets herself involved in spying on Wallis Simpson.
And how glamorous.
Very glamorous. Yeah, so without meaning to, she has a sort of political and social awakening. So, yeah, it's quite interesting. Then in the modern section, you're looking at two women from different-ish backgrounds, but actually, I'd say, not different enough for how different they are. You know, they're just from very different circumstances and their lives have gone in very different directions. But again, these two.
Yes. Well, it's two women who went to university together and were very close at university. But I think as they've grown, as they've matured, their sort of values and their social beliefs have matured as well and changed as well. And actually, there are differences in their backgrounds which have sort of planted seeds of the people they grow into. So whereas Celia comes from quite an affluent background where it's, you know, very traditional, with a very traditional mother who really, you know, believes in such things as national service being brought back and such archaic things as that, isn't very forward thinking. You know, she's become a businesswoman to kind of prove herself and her worth, and work and success has become key. Having it all has become the key thing for her. Whereas Lucy has sort of tried to make choices which improve other people's lives, really. She wanted to be a teacher. She wanted to work in difficult areas in London. She wanted to help people, and she just couldn't cope and ended up... it's not so much about not being able to cope with the work, but just the system not serving the people who try to help people.
Becoming disillusioned.
Yeah, absolutely. Very much disillusioned. And actually gets into having problems with alcohol and then loses her job and finds herself sofa surfing at the age of 32 and just thinking, what is life about? I don't know. Whereas Celia seems or feels like she has it all sewn up. So it's these two women, very similar in age, but in completely different places in their lives and in terms of working out who they are and what's important in life, really.
Yeah, because, you know, you can have all the ideas you want, but you don't have a choice in when and where you were born and the circumstances you were born into. But it sometimes has, it always has a very defining effect on your character and your fate, etc. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, my character, Anne, she's had a lot of miscarriages and she's possibly... I think she maybe didn't make them, in my mind anyway, she's gone through a lot of a loss when she was with her husband, and when he left, I think she feels even more that she perhaps didn't make the most of the time they had together. And I think she's trying very hard to do something good, a little bit like perhaps Lucy is in 2014. She's trying to look after the people she cares about in the village and perhaps feel like she's...
Absolutely.
And I think there's a motherly side to her that has been unfulfilled by the fact that she was all her children were born, stillborn. And I think she kind of... That's sort of frustrated. And she has a half-sister, basically, who is Joan, who's a witch, and she... she's not a witch, she's a cunning woman.
She's a witch.
A witch in the good sense of the term, a sort of white witch, but, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, and that she's actually her only family that's left. So I think all these things are, they're very much human concerns, but in this instance, there's no men involved. And obviously there are much stronger constraints on women at that time, the more palpable ones, like sort of the ownership of property and all that kind of stuff, which in this instance isn't applying to them. So they're all beginning in their own different ways to think about who they could be.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not, the sort of boundaries aren't so boxed off. Again, similarly as it was in the First World War. You know.
And is that what ties these three stories together? Is that these are timeless stories and timeless emotions and timeless questions.
Yeah, I think so. There's a universality about it.
Mm.
Certainly, that these are still, there are things cropping up and emotions and difficulties cropping up in the 17th century, which you see recurring in the 21st century. And just the kind of, they're human stories, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Not all of the characters in the play, but a lot of them, especially the sort of central ones from each period, have some sort of awakening, have some sort of transition. They change the way they feel about me. By the end, Celia has had her eyes opened somewhat.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings. Mwah.
You've already started.
We have started. We're a week in, so we're on three more
Excellent.
Weeks.
How's it going?
Good, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
great.
This is 1 week exactly, isn't it?
We've done one week exactly.
And when is the run through?
We close on the 13th of April.
Excellent. So everybody hurry up.
Yes.
And Rebecca, I wanted to ask you, because you're also a co-producer.
I'm one of the founders, yes. Yeah. We set up on leaving drama school. A group of us just wanted to put on a show, really. It was as simple as that. And we found
a
play.
We're actors, we want a show.
We're actors, we want a play, exactly. And we found a play that was all female. So then marketed ourselves as an all-female company and very quickly became aware of how unusual that was. So we didn't sort of set out with this sort of idea. It just was like, oh, okay. Well, I didn't realise this was such a big deal to be a woman. Exactly. Like, whoa. And it was amazing.
Oh my God, we're feminists. What happened?
Exactly.
I didn't mean to be a feminist.
It's a bit And then, so then we thought, okay, right, well, there's clearly a need for this. So we went on to keep commissioning new writers to write new plays for all female casts.
And what is your name?
Fluff Productions.
Fluff Productions.
Yes, which is,
It's kind of like Radio Gorgeous.
Yeah, exactly. Ironic.
Yeah. Post-feminist.
Yeah, exactly.
When there's no longer a need, we keep hoping.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. And after this production, I'm sure you're always thinking ahead. What's next for Fluff?
Last month, we did a project, No More Page 3 campaign.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, where we set up a competition called Fluff Shorts. And then we asked writers to submit short plays based on No More Page 3. Oh. And they could go anywhere with that. Mm-hmm. It's just as long as it started with that as the basis. And we chose three winners and we put it on for like 3 nights here, actually. So it went down so well, we definitely want to get together with Lucy Holmes from No More Page 3, who saw the plays and was all very excited, and think about a longer run for that.
Excellent. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
We're looking forward to hearing more about that.
Lovely.
As and when.
Thank you.
Exactly. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Off to makeup you go.
Donna, thank you so much for that interview. Fascinating. So if you want to get tickets, go to our website, radiogorgeous.com. And the other show we're talking about, I got contacted by Rosie Wilby. Rosie Wilby is a comedian and she's a lesbian and she's very out and very proud. In the 90s, she was part of a women's collective who created a magazine, hoping it would be a bit like Spare Rib. But she had really good fun. And the main thing was is that it just really wasn't in to be a feminist in the 90s. So she really was challenged because that was a time when it's in to be a ladette. So what she did was she went to her parents' attic and she found the magazine. She thought, well, I really want to write a show about the women. And because of, you know, the internet now and everything, I can trace these women. So this is a one-woman show, her show, and she finds out what happened to all the different characters in real life that were in this group, this feminist group, and, you know, 20 years on. Here we go, Rosie Wilby. You're doing a show which you've written, created, and starring in, which is a comedy kind of stand-up show called 90s Woman. Why? I mean, are you a 90s woman? Were you a 90s woman? Is that when you were peaking?
Peaking, yes. Well, I think so. '90s and I was at university, so it was a very formative time for me. And what I've done is I found in my parents' attic some old dusty copies of a women's newspaper that I was involved with at York Uni back in the 90s. It was called Matrix, and it was this gloriously sort of lo-fi DIY newspaper with all our articles, cartoons in it. And
so was it a bit like Spare Rib sort of thing?
Yeah, it kind of had an element of that. Obviously, Spare Rib was out at the time, and we were inspired by that. And so we put this together every term, and, you know, it was very lo-fi. We used to sort of cut and paste it with glue and scissors and then get it all printed up. I found the copies, and I decided to go about tracing some of the women again and track them down and find out what they were doing now. And I filmed interviews with them, sort of very guerrilla style on my little flip cam. And they become a part of the show, and I sort of link the story in between and remember, some of the daft things that we all got up to in the name of feminism and idealism.
Okay, so tell us some funny things that happened then.
Well, you know, I think it's just really sweet that myself and another comedian now who was involved with the newspaper fleetingly at the time, Zoe Lyons, who you might have heard of, she's popped up on a lot of panel shows on TV and radio.
Yeah.
We both got involved with this newspaper because we had a crush on the woman who was running it, who was at the centre of things.
Great. Now, what's happened to the woman? What's she up to?
Track her down, and she's married and living in Bristol. But,
oh, wow, so she's gone straight.
Yeah.
I suppose some of them do.
What was really funny was this woman actually staged a wedding to her girlfriend at the time on Valentine's Day outside York Minster.
Wow.
Me and Zoe were both there sort of feeling crushed that the woman we loved was marrying somebody else.
Well, feminism was basically a dirty word then. I mean, you were meant to be hanging with the lads, weren't you, in the '90s?
Yes, you were. You were meant to be ladettes.
Yeah, yeah. You were meant to be drinking pints, and you were meant to be a man, actually.
Yeah, it kind of got like that. There was a lot I loved about the '90s. I loved the sort of androgynous clothes that we all wore, like the Dr. Martin boots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that was quite liberating in a way, because now obviously women, you know,
yeah, women, it's false nails now, isn't it? Yeah. Now it's like falseness is in the majority of Britain. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I mean, you know, I love wearing makeup.
Yeah. So do I.
Horrified the other day when I'd actually gone out the house without mascara, and I always like to wear a little bit of makeup, but I just think it is really going quite extreme.
Yes, it is. It is. What's she up to now? The ex-girlfriend.
She gave up being a barrister to run a vintage hair lounge in Southampton, and she does all kind of hairstyles on film sets and stuff.
That's fabulous. I really like the sound of that. So you can have a bouffant or, you know, or a shingle, or, you know, any style, like a retro style. That's so cool.
Yeah, well, she always rocked a bit of a vintage look back then as well.
God, so it really is. It's fascinating because it's a slice of women with ideals. And now what, you know, and they sound like they've all kind of kept, as you say, a little bit close to them. But what's really interesting is, as I say, feminism was so out then, and it's so in now that you really can put on the show in a way. It's kind of because of a cycle of feminism.
It's like things come round again, but it's odd. The cyclical nature means that you never really make any progress and move forward.
Yes.
Of course, we're going around in circles and we're talking about the same things again.
Yeah.
Very much like sort of imagery of women and body image and how we have to live up to, you know, the way women look in magazines and stuff, and how that makes, you know, your sort of average woman on the street feel about herself, and, you know, and sort of punish herself with diets and all kinds of regimes like that.
And self-hatred.
Yeah, with things like equal pay and sexual harassment and, you know, equal representation of women on the boards and committees. And it's still all of the same things that we were sort of talking about then. And it's really interesting.
Tell me about your tour. How did you set it up?
I've got another London show at the Tristan Bates Theatre on the 4th of April. It's at the Actors' Centre in Covent Garden.
Oh, God, that's easy.
Yes. TristanBatesTheatre.co.uk.
Brilliant.
And they've got a festival of solo performance called Firth, which is on during April.
Rosie, it's been so brilliant having you on the show today. And if people...
Thank you.
What's your website address?
It's rosiewilby.com.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. And good luck. RadioGorgeous.com. So if you check out our website, you can get a link to her show. Now, Gorgeous Gossip, I do want to talk a bit about Gwyneth Paltrow, because she has, God, she's so brilliant at putting her foot in it. I mean, it's just brilliant in a way, because she's such comic entertainment for us. Apart from nicely divorcing her husband, which again is so annoying because that isn't true in real life. You usually can't bear the man you're divorcing. She says, "My life is harder than the average working mum's." This is her. "I think it's different when you have an office job because it's routine and you know you can do all the stuff in the morning and then you can come home in the evening. When you're shooting a movie, they're like, we need you to go to Wisconsin for 2 weeks and then you work 14 hours a day and part of that is very difficult. I think to have a regular job and be a mom is not as difficult, of course. There are challenges, but it's not like being on set and being paid £2 million for your film and having staff and having housekeepers and having cooks, having makeup, having hair, having a dietitian. We really do feel sorry for you." I'm not bitter. I know I've got a better life than Gwyneth because I invented Radio Gorgeous and that makes me feel really good and empowered. And that's why I've done it, to make all women feel good and empowered. So lovely to have you all on the show today. And thank you so much. Donna, come back soon. We miss you. This is a Radio Gorgeous production for Radio Gorgeous, radiogorgeous.com. Thanks for listening. Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice.